evening, and welcome to Donnell Edwards Viewpoints. I am your host, Donnell Edwards. On this day, September 11, 2001, one of the greatest tragedies in modern American history occurred when terrorists attacked the World Trade Center in New York, the Pentagon in Arlington, Virginia, and a fourth plane was en route to Washington, D.C., and crashed after passengers overcame the terrorists. In all, 2,997 people were killed and over 6,000 were injured. We have posted facts about 9/11 from the History Channel on our website at cwrworldnews.net, and it can be found under the 9/11 tab. At this time, we would like to observe a moment of silence in honor of all those who lost their lives and those who were injured, as well as all of the heroic first responders and others who assisted them, who worked relentlessly to provide needed aid during this time of crisis. Thank you so much, and let's never forget. Welcome again to Donnell Edwards Viewpoints. Our topic for discussion is race relations in America. Where do we go from here? This is a continuing series on the CWR network, and the purpose is to promote open dialogue between people of different races, ethnic or social or religious backgrounds, with the intent of improving racial and other relations among people of different cultures and backgrounds here in the United States. Our very special guests are Ms. Starla Lewis and Mr. Kevin Henry. Ms. Lewis, for the past 40 years, has committed herself to bridging, unifying, and empowering multiculturally diverse communities. As a professor of Black Studies, poet, author, and life mastery consultant, Ms. Lewis has helped thousands of people recognize their own greatness. She is the founder of CELL, that's C-E-L-L, which is an acronym for Celebration of Everlasting Love and Life, a human potential consultancy firm where she has worked for 30 years as a life mastery coach. Through teaching people how to share compassion, love, mutual respect, and understanding, her work has helped to bridge the human family. She is also a member of the San Diego Women's Hall of Fame as a bridge builder. Starla, welcome to Donnell Edwards Viewpoints.
It's an honor to be here. Looking forward to the conversation.
Thank you so much. Now, Mr. Henry has over 30 years of media experience producing educational programs related to culture, diversity, and red-hot social issues. As diversity coordinator for the city of Bellevue, Washington, from 1994 to 2015, Kevin regularly coordinated and facilitated community forums and workplace trainings focusing on community engagement, cultural competence, and race and social justice issues. In addition, he wrote for numerous publications and hosted radio programs devoted to exploring issues related to diversity while providing a platform for voices often ignored by the mainstream media. Both Mr. Henry and Ms. Lewis comprise the diversity community team on Yah That Game. Please tell our audience just what Yah That Game is and about the diversity community.
Do we want to go ladies first, or should I go? Doesn't matter to me.
Well, you know, I'll take it. Yah That Game is a group of coaches who have different topics that address life skill mastery. You know, we live in a time where we learn a lot of facts and figures K through 12, but part of what youth are begging for and adults also need are life skills. And so Yah That Game deals with life skills from parenting to the ecology to diversity. So we do a lot of different things, but it's all about life skills that help us live better in the world.
Okay, very good.
And I just wanted to add, too, that it is a very interactive type of organization, and that all of our coaches have monthly conference calls where people can participate in discussions similar to these on subjects that also relate to things like how to raise your teens, internet safety, financial planning, things like that as well.
Okay. I have visited the website and was very interesting to learn all of the different things that are covered there, just as you mentioned. And there's something there for everybody and some things that people may not think of that much where they need help with, like organization, time management, and things of that nature. So it's a very interesting website. So thank you for sharing that with us. Now, Kevin, how would you describe the current status of race relations in America? And then, Starla, we would also like to hear your comment on this question. And to underscore the racial problem in America, the recent protests against the removal of Confederate monuments in Charlottesville, Virginia, on August 12th by white nationalists and white supremacists that turned violent shows how divided we are racially. So, Kevin, would you kind of give your take on just where we are right now?
Yeah, I will try. Well, I guess one thing that comes to mind is kind of a pot. You know, when you put a pot on the stove and you put water in it, and then you turn the heat up, and then it starts to kind of bubble, but maybe the lid doesn't quite come off, but the lid kind of rattles a little bit and shakes. It kind of reminds me of that in that, you know, we go through our daily lives with, you know, trying to be polite to each other, going to work, picking up our kids at school, helping them with their homework, that kind of thing. But underneath this kind of veneer, this surface, I think it's a lot of tension, apprehension that I can feel. You can feel it in the cities. You can feel it in the workplace at times. You can definitely feel it if you turn on the TV. And what's been interesting, and in some ways it's been more anxiety-producing, is that when a subject like the statue, Confederate statues, comes up, or maybe football players not kneeling or kneeling for the anthem and things like that, all of a sudden that pot kind of just comes off and hits the floor. Then all of a sudden people start arguing online, unfriending each other on Facebook. It's happened to me personally where I've discovered things about people that I had no idea. I've known for, you know, 15, 20 years, and all of a sudden they're saying things that I felt, you know, were showed a very deep-seated bias. So I think there's a lot of tension, and unless we discuss things openly and fairly and really listen to each other, I think that it's only going to get worse, and you're going to see it play out in the streets and play out in different places in society.
You know, that's really interesting metaphor you used about the pot, and I think it's very appropriate to this situation. Starla?
Well, you know, one of the things that I've done for the last 40 years is teach history as well. And I do believe that as Americans, we are very miseducated about our history. We learn bits and pieces of it, but we don't get to see the whole picture, the whole story. And I think because of that, people have developed biases based on misinformation. You know, we used to believe all these biases are passed down through our parents. But if our parents were miseducated, then their children are going to be equally as miseducated if they're still getting the same information. So I think that part of this pot bubbling over is about our ignorance about our own history and how our histories are tied together. And then the other piece, which I'm a proponent of, is the fact that we keep using terminology that has already been proven not to be real. For example, race is not a scientific term, and yet we talk about being a race, we talk about our racial issues, we're talking about our biracial existence, when in reality there's one race and it's called human, and we haven't learned how to put the puzzle pieces of the human family together so that we can see the big picture, and that is the oneness of our humanity.
Great, great. Now, both of you right on target with those comments. Now, going back to that situation there in Charlottesville, that was the basis for that protest because of the removal of the Confederate monuments.
And we mentioned the white supremacists and the white nationalists, and there are other groups like this. But for those who may not know, Starla, can you differentiate between the white nationalist groups and the white supremacists?
Well, there's not a big difference. And the reason I say that is the underlying philosophy of racism itself is the belief in white supremacy. And so I may believe in it very overtly, like a Nazi or a Klan member, or I may believe in it very covertly, like a school teacher or a judge. In other words, it comes out in different ways in different people, but if it's part of the founding of our nation, which we know that it is, then all of us learned it on some level, and all of us have been infected with it to some degree. It varies from individual to individual and from group to group how deeply we're affected, but I think it's almost impossible not to even acknowledge that we all have been affected. I always say some of my good friends are white supremacists, and they're not even black. They're not even white. So, you know, I think we all on some level have been taught to believe that white is superior, that white is better, that white is the norm, that white is the standard, and that white is right.
Okay, very good.
Well, and I wanted to add to that. I think that to add to that list, I think that sometimes people will think it's easier to be white, because I know growing up for me in the 60s and the 70s that there were times when some of my black friends would say, you know, I just wish I was white. I wouldn't have to put up with all this BS, you know. So they would do things to kind of run away from their blackness and their culture because it just was problematic for them.
Okay. Now, Starling, Kevin, one of the issues that infuriates me the most is the senseless killing of unarmed black males by police officers and sometimes females. And I want to emphasize to those listening that myself and others who are enraged by this, both black and white, do not have a vendetta against the police as a whole, but it's those who have the shoot first and ask questions later mentality, and all of those in police administration and the courts who support them that we vehemently oppose. Although there are numerous incidents that could be cited over the past several years, I want to focus on two this evening that demonstrate what I'm talking about and why so many people have issues with the police. One is the April 29th shooting death of the 15-year-old Jordan Edwards in Texas, when an officer fired a rifle into the vehicle Jordan was riding along with his brothers and friends. The other is the jury finding the officers who shot and killed Philando Castile in Minnesota not guilty, which frequently happens in situations like this. And those kind of things make it appear that officers can shoot unarmed black males and claim they fear for their lives and know that nothing's going to be done. But Kevin, how does this keep happening?
Well, you know, it's a complex situation in that a lot of times, unfortunately, we aren't in the car or we personally aren't present there to really view what happens. And so you wind up getting into this, well, the officer says this, the man's girlfriend said that, and then everybody kind of jumps on one side or the other of the fence. And unfortunately, I think that we live in a society where, and I think Starla will get into this a little bit as well, is that there's history here, you know, in that there's a long history, and I think there's a lot of great police officers out there. I mean, I've known some. I think it's a difficult job. I think that more often than not, police officers are great people. But there's been a history of, I remember in the 70s, Richard Pryor just shooting about, I am reaching into my pocket to get my license because I don't want to be another victim of an accidental police shooting. So I think that when a situation happens, there are officers out there that have a preconceived idea. When they approach a car and there's two black males in the car versus two white males in business suits, that there's a preconceived idea or a bias that already exists there that their life could potentially be in danger. And I think their senses are heightened. I think very often the officers have overreacted in a situation. I think that from a black male perspective, I know if a cop drives up behind me, I start to tense up, and it might be I might only be getting a parking ticket for all I know. But and given that dynamic, I think that black people or black males in particular can be even more tense than they would if a black officer came up. So you have these kind of elements, kind of like the ingredients for an explosion. And I think that a lot of it just has to do with the preconceived idea about black males, that they're angry, they're dangerous, and that they're if you don't kind of have your hand on your gun and your finger on the trigger, you could be dead. And I think that just exasperates the situation.
Okay.
That helps.
Well, I too agree with you about the police. They have a very difficult job. I worked in the local police department here for several years while I was going back to school to get my degree, and I worked in the records department, and that's where all of the information comes in, all the reports from everything that's going on, so you really get a real good pulse of what's happening in the city. And in reading those reports and knowing some of the things that some of those officers went through and some of the things they had to take, it's shocking that we don't have more incidents. But getting back to the point here, even though I agree with what you said, there is a situation. We had a program that we did earlier this year, and it was on this very subject, and I had a former law enforcement officer from the LA Police Department who worked his way up through the ranks and was actually working with the DEA, was a high ranking official there, and also an attorney. And we were talking about this, and we'd invited some police departments to participate, and did not get anyone to participate from any police department. But one of the things that came out on that show, there was a audio clip that I got from another program, and there was a department head from a police department, and he made the comment that officers are afraid, kind of like what you were saying. And he made the comment that many officers go by the code. I'd rather be tried by 12 than carried by 6. In other words, they'd rather shoot now and save their lives because they feel like they're in danger and allow the courts to go through the process than to not react and possibly get killed. Now, that kind of mentality to me is dangerous. And to me, if you're going to be a police officer and you take that code to serve and protect, and you know that you're going to be putting your life on the line every day, you can't think like that. Is that incorrect?
Go ahead, Starla.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't think it's so much incorrect as it is a testament to the fact that police officers who go into black and brown communities go in there with a position of fear. And because of that position of fear, they're more likely to use lethal force than not. We do know from the statistics that more young white men are arrested than black men or brown men, and yet we don't hear of a young white man being shot on a day-to-day basis. We do hear of black and brown men being shot on a day-to-day basis. That in and of itself, no matter what the police procedures are, lets you know that they have some discrepancy on how they're going to use those procedures.
Okay, very good. Now, as the result of the racial divisiveness in the country, and especially the killing of unarmed black males by police, and sometimes not even by police, I think the this organization actually came into existence back when Trayvon Martin was killed. But we have Black Lives Matter now, and that's to some people a controversial organization because they don't understand. And then you have other people coming up with, you know, White Lives Matter or Blue Lives Matter or All Lives Matter, which are all true. Just like you mentioned before, Stoller, there's only one race, the human race. All lives do matter. But this organization came into existence as a result of things that were going on, that were happening in the black community. And people,
right,
regardless of who they are, that think that things are going to happen like they did in the pre-civil rights era and back in slavery, and if you can treat black people anyway and there's not going to be any repercussions, that's just not going to happen in this day and time. So when we look at Black Lives Matter, and I was listening to your show after the Charlottesville incident, Kevin, you mentioned how some want to compare Black Lives Matter to the Ku Klux Klan. Would you please explain that kind of thinking, how that kind of thinking contributes to the problem of the racial divide in America?
Well, one thing I wanted to emphasize, I'm glad you brought it up, was that I believe that, you know, Black Lives Matter, as well as organizations in the past like the Black Panthers or the NAACP, for that matter, wouldn't have needed to really exist if it wasn't for groups like the KKK and the Nazis. So right off the bat, I think that separates them in terms of their agenda and their history and what they're all about. I think that there's a feeling in the country sometimes, and I've seen this play out with the anthem and the statues, that if you're critical of the flag or critical of the way the country is being run or what's going on in the country, that you're somehow anti-American. So if you're saying I'm a member of Black Lives Matter, then you must be anti-white. So then I'm going to now lump you into the category along with the KKK as a racist hate organization. Now, I don't always agree with every tactic or thing that Black Lives Matter does, but Black Lives Matter, because you're saying Black Lives Matter, doesn't mean that blue lives don't matter, all lives don't matter. It's just that right now we're focused on the fact that Black Lives Matter because there's a disproportionate amount of black people getting shot in the streets by cops and other people in other instances. So, but I think it just kind of further polarizes people. It's just like with the anthem. It's like, well, if you kneel for the anthem, you must be anti-American, and you should go and leave the country and go live in Korea. This is one of the things I've heard recently. So there's no gray area. It's just all black and white. No pun intended.
I got you. Now, right now, we're going to have some very important messages, and then when we come back, we're going to talk about something that Starla said in your recent show about beliefs in superiority.
People been saying to your friend, get a different face, and posting on their feed, they're super ugly. The things they say to them online are cruel and they're not true. So tell your friend, I'll stand up for you. Don't worry, I know what to do.
Know someone being bullied online? You can be a witness and make a difference by letting the world know it isn't cool and by letting your friend know you care. Learn more at eyewitnessbullying.org, brought to you by the Ad Council.
Why is Connor having trouble focusing in school?
Having trouble finding Connor's middle school? Would you like directions?
No, why is Connor having trouble focusing in school?
Finding lowest airfare to Istanbul.
No, I'm tired of fighting with him over homework.
Home, walk, restaurant. Need a review?
No, I need help. He's very smart, but his mind wanders. He's disorganized.
I think I understand.
Oh, good.
Finding best potatoes for French fries.
No!
Russet, fingerling, Yukon gold.
Why don't you understand me?
Sorry, I was trying to show how Connor feels every day. Frustrating, isn't it? Redirecting to understood.org.
For the 1 in 5 kids with learning and attention issues, this is what life can feel like. Explore understood.org, a free online resource about learning and attention issues, designed to help your child thrive in school and in life. Understood.org, because understanding is everything.
Brought to you by understood.org and the Ad Council.
You're listening to Donnell Edwards Viewpoints, and our topic for discussion is race in America. Where do we go from here? And our special guests are Ms. Starla Lewis and Mr. Kevin Hendry. We want to hear your viewpoint, so call us at 563-999-3660, and we will gladly take your question or comment. That number to call again is 563-999-3660. When you call in, you will automatically go into our phone queue, so just hold on, and we will get to your call. Now, Starla, during your recent show on Charlottesville, you mentioned that one of the problems contributing to racial prejudice is not hate, but beliefs in superiority. I think you kind of touched on that a little bit in the show tonight. Would you please elaborate further on that statement?
Well, certainly. The most racist people that I have consistently dealt with have been educators. And I know that these are good people. I know these are people who want to help children be better in life and contribute to the world. And yet, because they have a lot of myths, lies, and stereotypes about the students they're teaching, often they're failing the students. One of my favorite examples is teachers can't teach who they don't know. And so I had a Latina student who shared with me that her white teacher told her, my job is to turn you into a white girl. Well, all she's really saying is, this is the standard that we have a set, and to meet that standard, you have to be like me, because I fit the standard. She didn't mean to offend the girl. She didn't mean to put her down. And she was really saying, I'm trying to help you fit in here. You know, we never talk about what racism is, but all it is the belief that one's race is innately superior to all other races and therefore has the right to rule. I became a black studies professor because I realized when I was 18 years old that I had a high school diploma, that I had a 3.8 GPA, and I knew nothing about myself, my history, my culture, or how I fit in to my American self. And so I was on a quest to discover, how am I connected to this country that I was born in? I think I was in the fourth grade when I discovered I was of African descent, because African-American children can graduate from high school and never be told that your ancestors came from Africa. And people are amazed at that, but that's part of what's not being taught in school. The fact that Egypt is in Africa, there are PhD professors who will challenge that. They know it's in the Middle East, as if the Middle East is a continent in and of itself. And so I say all this to say, if you through omission, make one group feel like they have accomplished everything, done everything, contributed everything, then, and everybody else believes that, then we all become agents, if you will, of the belief in white supremacy. You know, you might hear an African American say, oh, I'm going to move to a good neighborhood, and then they'll be the only person of color in the neighborhood. Or they'll just simply say, oh, I'm going to move to a better neighborhood. It's all white. And they're living there as if their physical presence there is negated or does not count. Because once they're there, it's not all white anymore. Do you understand what I'm saying? And so that, I think, becomes the unconscious, subliminal, covert way in which white supremacy is perpetuated. And it's not just perpetuated by white people. I think that's very important. And it is not, it's also perpetuated by our institutions and the images of power, which are usually white male.
Okay. Now, when we talk about that belief in superiority, is that kind of related to the concept of white privilege?
Well, everybody wants privileges. And privileges are usually connected to power. So whoever has the power, people tend to connect themselves to. For example, in our society, there's sexism. So women who want to have power often connect themselves to powerful men, because the men have more opportunities to be in positions of power than women do. And so for people of color, often we believe that if I master the king's English, if I make a lot of money, if I get a bunch of degrees, then my color won't matter anymore, although that has been proven not to be the case.
Okay.
Yeah, and the thing is that you can believe all that, and a cop can still pull you over and throw you down on the ground and treat you like you're not any of those things you just mentioned. So there's kind of a fallacy in just even having that approach towards your own life, I think.
And I want to support what Kevin said earlier about the privileges, because of those privileges, it has been conservatively estimated that since slavery, 10,000 African Americans who are light enough and whose hair is straight enough and who physically can look the part become white people every year. And then they take the DNA and share it in the white community.
Unfortunate, but true. Sure, certainly is. Now, Kevin.
It isn't because black people don't like themselves. It's because, like everybody, black people want an easier life. And if getting to those privileges by any means necessary can make your life easy, a lot of people strive in that direction.
Okay, very good. Now, Kevin, I keep going back to your Charlottesville program. And I, for everybody that's listening, Kevin and Starley, you can tell them where they can hear that. But I do encourage everyone that's listening to listen to that. That was a powerful program. I really enjoyed it. But during the Charlottesville program, you also stated that parents play a huge role in influencing their children about racism. And I think we kind of touched on this a little bit already. But would you please explain that comment?
Mm-hmm. Well, there's so many ways that parents can influence the way that their children perceive the world and perceive others. And it's a huge responsibility, but it's a great responsibility, because if you do it right, I think that you can produce a very open-minded, sensitive, and caring adult. But I think that a lot of times kids are exposed to things, and if there's no one there to explain it to them, then they're forced to come up with their own conclusions. Like, one of the things that I know that always disturbs me is when adults or parents will say, well, I teach my kids not to see color. You know, just treat everybody the same, and they try and pretend that there isn't racism out there and there isn't hate or whatever you want to call it, because they're trying to protect their children from it. So then when a child of color in particular goes out into the world and they're called a name at age 11 or 12 and nobody's ever talked to them before that, that it's something that can be soul-crushing. It can affect their self-identity, their sense of self-worth, and it could have been prevented in the sense that if you'd start talking to your children about the way the world is, and racism is part of that, at an much earlier age, you prepare them. The other thing is that parents will say things around their kids about people of color, other minorities, women, etc., in front of their kids, and the kids see their parents as role models, and if their parents are saying something's okay, or they're making fun of a particular race or gender or what have you, then they're going to grow up thinking that. So I'm not sure if I exactly touched on what I said in that particular program, but I do think that parents, what they say carries a lot of weight, both positive and negative.
Okay, very good. And you know, that goes both ways, because that happens in black homes, that happens in white homes. I'm sure that happens in Asian and Latino homes. So we all need to do a little self-check and make sure that we look at how we view others and get to a point where we look at everybody the same way, just like Star was mentioning before. We're all one human race. Now, Starley, you made another interesting observation in the Charlottesville program that there is no dialogue in this country about race. And I've been saying that for years. As a matter of fact, back in 2000, I had a TV show that I created for local cable television, and it was called The Multicultural Zone. And the whole concept was to bring people, and at that time, from the dominant culture, the dominant white culture, African-American, Asian, Pacific Americans, and the Latinos together on a panel to talk openly about what was going on in our communities, how we felt about each other, things that would not necessarily get out in the open, but would be kept within those closed communities. But recently, in commenting about her new role on the popular news show on CBS 60 Minutes, Oprah Winfrey said, and I quote, "At a time when people are so divided, my intention is to bring relevant insight and perspective to look at what separates us and help facilitate real conversations between people from differing backgrounds," end of quote. Now, this is what we have been doing at the CWR Media for years. Is this of what Ms. Winfrey said, is this a good start at the national level?
Well, you know, when I look at Oprah's show in the past, one of the things that she did that a lot of people weren't able to do was get America talking about the isms, racism, sexism, classism. And so if that is her agenda, I think she may be able to pull it off. The challenge is that people have to have the courage to enter into the dialogue. Not just white people, but black people, Latino people have avoided the dialogue as well. There is a part of all of us, I think that's a little Pollyanna, that really wants to believe that these issues are the past and we don't have to address them anymore. But when you look at the pain on young black males who are stopped by the police on a regular basis, on their way to school, on the way to a party, on the way wherever, when you look at the frustration of mothers who have lost their sons and daughters, when you look at the bodies that are packed in our police system, I mean our penal system and our juvenile system, you know that we haven't had the conversation. And we know that if we don't, it will continue to spiral out of control. And now that we have an atmosphere that says it's okay to come out and express your feelings about feeling like your America is not your America and all those kinds of things, it's all of our America. And we don't want it to go back the way it was, because the way it was filled with racism and hostility toward people of color. We've never acknowledged that that's what old America looked like. And so when people say, I want my America back, they don't even understand that's a highly charged racist comment. I think that we're challenged to not only teach our children, but model behavior for our children that shows that we're trying to do the work too, that the parents of children's friends have conversations, not just, oh, I have a friend of a different ethnicity at school, but they never come to my house. Our parents never meet and talk to one another. I think it's walking the walk, if you will, not just talking the talk. And I think we've talked the talk more than walk the walk. And finally, what I want to say is, I want to quote Malcolm X, who said, integration without education will never work. And by that, I think he meant just throwing groups of strangers together in a pool and stirring them up and having one like the other isn't enough. We have to know who we're liking. But before you can like me, I have to like me. And I can't like me if I don't have any information about myself. I can create a self. I can create a false self. I can create a mask even. And you may like my mask, but you don't know what's behind the mask. And I think we all want to be seen and seen for who we really are.
Well, okay. And if I could just jump in real quickly. Also, you mentioned a couple key words. I thought you said real. You used the word safe. I think people have to feel safe. And these are all voices, black and white, all the different colors. Everybody's voice is equally important. And I think we really have to learn to listen because. This isn't a very emotionally charged type of conversation. And I'm on social media quite a bit, and I see people that what will happen sometimes is you'll get like a person of color talking about maybe there's a shooting or something like that, and then, of course, you know, they have their viewpoint about that. Then a white person will come into the conversation and maybe challenge what is being said or ask a question, and they just get hammered. I mean, it's just, you know, called a bunch of names, you're a racist, you're narrow-minded, you know, you have no credibility. And then the person just kind of says, well, I'm done with the conversation. And now that person, just because you've got them off your Facebook page, that doesn't mean that they're not thinking the same thing they thought before they got into the conversation. So it's just like when we chase the KKK out of the park, they don't evaporate and disappear. You know, that's just the beginning of our work. But what we really have to do in order to change minds and change the way people feel about each other is, like Starla said, start understanding ourselves and our own history better, but also being willing to listen to voices that don't necessarily coincide with what we're thinking. That's the only way we can start building bridges.
And I can't ask other people to stretch themselves and take themselves to the comfort discomfort zone if I'm not willing to do the same thing. You know, a lot of times people of color want white people to know about me this way and know about me that way and look what happened to me and look and that. But at the same time, we have to understand what happens to them when segregation exists. What happens to them when discrimination exists? Because the reality is you can't do something to anyone without something happening to you. And you can't step into something that has already been created way before you were born that you're benefiting from without finding out what is it about me benefiting from this that I'm comfortable with even after I learn how other people are suffering because of it.
Okay. Let me just throw this out for conversation for both of you. You mentioned, Starla, that everyone has to participate in this dialogue about race, and some people, for whatever reason, are not doing that. Is it just me being overly optimistic in believing that there are people, large numbers of people, black and white, that have advanced past the point of tolerance and have really become friends and have some meaningful relationships? But I think one of the things that keeps people from participating in the dialogue is fear of what their coworkers may think, fear of what their relatives may think, fear of what others in the community may think. Is that possibly one of the reasons for keeping this from moving forward?
I think that's part of it, but I think the bigger challenge is we really want to believe we're past it. And when you're in denial that something is and that it is as big as it is, then it remains the same because the dialogue was, well, that was the pastor. Oh, that's not happening anymore. You know, I'm around a lot of very amazing people from diverse backgrounds who have amazing hearts and are contributing to the world in all kinds of amazing ways. But their world is very small, and it's very comfortable. And so for them to step outside their comfort zone and see what else is happening in the world is difficult for most of them. And these are women of all ethnicities. It doesn't matter. I have black friends who will not watch a movie about slavery. I have Latino friends who don't want to know about their African roots. I mean, it's wherever we're comfortable, often that's where we want to stay. And my mother used to say, ignorance is bliss. And so sometimes people just want to stay in a bliss state.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Very good. Well, I tell you what, we're going to listen to some more important messages here. And then when we come back, we're going to shift gears a little bit and expand our discussion. And we kind of touched on this a little bit already, but we do want to cover the full spectrum. And so when we come back, we're going to talk about how other racial and ethnic groups are affected by the racial tensions and racial divisions in America.
Why is Connor having trouble focusing in school?
Having trouble finding Connor Middle School? Would you like directions?
No, why is Connor having trouble focusing in school?
Finding lowest airfare to Istanbul.
No, I'm tired of fighting with him over homework.
Home, walk, restaurant. Need a review?
No, I need help. He's very smart, but his mind wanders. He's disorganized.
I think I understand.
Oh, good.
Finding best potatoes for French fries.
No!
Russet, fingerling, Yukon gold.
Why don't you understand me?
Sorry, I was trying to show how Connor feels every day. Frustrating, isn't it? Redirecting to understood.org.
For the 1 in 5 kids with learning and attention issues, this is what life can feel like. Explore understood.org, a free online resource about learning and attention issues, designed to help your child thrive in school and in life. Understood.org, because understanding is everything.
Brought to you by understood.org and the Ad Council.
People been saying to your friend, get a different face, and posting on their feed, they're super ugly. The things they say.
someone being bullied online, you can be a witness and make a difference by letting the world know it isn't cool and by letting your friend know you care. Learn more at eyewitnessbullying.org, brought to you by the Ad Council.
You're listening to Donnell Edwards Viewpoints, and our topic for discussion is race in America. Where do we go from here? And our special guests are Ms. Starla Lewis and Mr. Kevin Henry. We want to hear your viewpoints, so call us at 563-999-3660, and we'll gladly take your question or comment. That number again is 563-999-3660. When you call in, you'll automatically go into our phone queue, so just hold the line, and we'll get to your call. Now, Kevin, getting back to you, is it only blacks who are victims of police brutality, hate crimes, other forms of racial prejudice, or are there other racial, ethnic, and religious groups that are also affected?
Well, I think the answer is yes, no. I'm sorry, no, it's not just black people. I know that there, when I was in Washington State, and I would live there for 27 years, especially after 9/11, there was an upsurge in hate crimes as well as other forms of hostility toward Muslims. I believe that's still going on. I live in Hawaii, which is kind of an interesting place in and of itself, because we are so multicultural here that I don't have a sense of any of that type of thing happening here. But I'm still in touch with a lot of people in the Seattle area who tell me, especially with what's going on with DACA and the controversy around immigration, that Latinos as well as Muslims are getting their fair share of hostility as well and discrimination. But I think Starla could also elaborate on that, living in California.
Well, okay, Starla?
California is very diverse. But you don't really see, this is hard to put it, it's so spread out that you don't really see large populations of people of color. You see pockets of people of color. And when we look up the definition of the word black in Webster's dictionary, it says any dark-skinned race, especially Negro. So when we talk in terms of black and white, we're not really just talking in terms of African-Americans and European-Americans. We're talking in terms of Anglo-Saxon European-Americans and other people of color as black, because basically, all the colored ethnic groups are treated the same. And there's an amazing book that I mentioned, I think, on our talk called A Different Mirror by Ron Takaki. And basically, he shows how each ethnic group comes to America and the stereotypes that are given to one when a new group comes are just lifted and placed on the new group, and then lifted and placed on the next group, and lifted and placed on the next group. So in our society, we really talk about whites and non-whites. And when you talk about non-whites, basically those non-whites are treated pretty much the same. So even in my classes, no matter what my students' ethnicity is, when they leave the class, they all say basically the same thing. I've learned more about myself in this class than any other class I've ever taken. And it's because we talk about it in terms of our connections and our common experiences, not just in terms of, how society labels us.
Okay, very good. You know, you triggered something when you mentioned that about the students in your class. For several years, I published an online student empowerment magazine, and each year we would do a special for Asian Pacific American Heritage Month, for Hispanic Heritage Month, and naturally African American History Month, and one of the things I was surprised to learn, you know, is learning Black history opens your eyes to so many things that you didn't know. But when I delved into the contributions that Asian Pacific Americans had made, and the contributions that Latinos had made, that helped me to see once again just what you were saying about us all being one human race. because there's not one that has outdone the other. All have made significant contributions to society. And I was not aware of a lot of those contributions until I had to do that research for the magazine for those different events. Now, Kevin, since you've been a part of the media for much of your life, has the media contributed in any way in creating racial stereotypes or in their reporting that result in racial bias? And Starla, I would like also to get your thoughts on this question.
Yeah, thanks for asking that question. I think they've definitely played a role in it. And just to start off by saying, you know, back in the 60s and 70s when I was a teenager, the media was pretty much your morning newspaper and the 6 o'clock news. But nowadays we have commentators, we have pundits, we have bloggers, we have people with their cell phones, we have Facebook, we have social media. So there's an onslaught of information, but the parameters of accuracy are very inconsistent. So a lot of times people throw things out there without fear of slander or libel suits, I guess. And then if you are one of these people, like a lot of us, that basically live our lives basing information that we get on sound bites, we get just part of the story very often. We're talking about complex issues very often that are drilled down to like 60-second segments on the national news. So it's very difficult to really understand the spectrum or the breadth of a situation or an incident or a news story by just getting these little crumbs, basically. But I think the media is a business, and so they thrive on conflict, controversy, sensationalism. That's what gets people to tune in. That's what gets hits on the website. That's what gets callers on the radio talk show. So I think they play into that whole sensationalistic type of approach to what's happening, and therefore a lot of the information that goes out to the public is very skewed, stereotypical. Sometimes it's just blatantly racist in its content. So, yes, I think it plays a very significant role.
Starla?
Well, yeah, I definitely agree with Kevin. And I look at the media more from the subliminal stuff, like the commercials and the TV shows. And one of the things that I know is that most of the writers of black characters are not black people. And so often the characters come out very stereotypical, very silly in behavior, not representing the diversity of African-American people, not representing the diversity of Latino people, et cetera, et cetera. And so I think it's important to know that often when people are watching television, I always say, if I came from another planet and I watched TV and I saw black male characters on TV, I wouldn't want my daughter to marry one either. And it's not because of who black men are, but it's how they're being portrayed to the world.
Exactly.
And even to the point where some of them will even start taking on that identity simply because they don't want to take on the other identity, but they only see two. I'll either be the example of what a white male is, or I'll be a stereotype of what a black male is, because that's what I'm constantly being bombarded with, and not having a stronger sense of self and individuality.
Thank you. Now,
I want to say one more
thing. Go ahead. Sure.
I've been watching films and TV programs, you know, all my life. And it wasn't until Peter Bratt, who is the brother of Benjamin Bratt, they did a film called La Mission. And in this film, there's all different kinds of ethnicities, including Native Americans, who you never see on TV. And it had all these different themes. And it was the first film I ever saw where I saw an African-American woman that I could truly relate to and identify with. She was a vegetarian. She was very spiritual. She was, you know, not hung up in fashion and eyelashes and nail polish and all that. Not saying there's anything wrong with that, but those don't represent me. And so to see this earthy, organic woman was such a, I didn't realize that I missed seeing images and stories of myself until I saw that movie and saw the diversity in the characters in each role from each culture. It was absolutely a phenomenal film.
Very good. Thank you for that. I think both of you have mentioned the fact that some people are in denial and don't want to acknowledge the state that we're in regard to the relations between the different groups here in the country. And many people want to allude to the time that we're living in as the post-civil rights era, referring to the period since the passage of the 1964 Civil Rights Act. And they point to all the progress that we've made, and I mentioned that myself. That's undeniable. We've made significant progress on a lot of fronts, and including in our relations. But in many ways, today, African Americans experience the same prejudices, hatred, and injustices we have always endured. They're just veiled in a different form. Now, as we mentioned early in the program, one glaring area is in police relations with the black community and the surge of the killing of unarmed black men by police. In the view of the ongoing proliferation of racial violence, how do we avoid losing ground on the progress that has been made? And Starling, Kevin, where do we go from here? And answer first, Starla.
Well, first of all, we have to acknowledge that we have lost ground. We have already lost ground, and it's partially because history repeats itself. And one of our famous orators, Frederick Douglass, said, "You must be forever vigilant because even slavery can take on yet another name." We have a prison industrial complex that parallels the enslavement of African people, and we have more people caught up in the prison industrial complex than we did in all the years that we were enslaved as property. And so I think it's important that we start looking at those parallels. We're losing more young men to violence than during the height of lynching, where we lost a black man every 2.5 days for 52 years. And so our challenge is looking at history, which most of us don't know, and then seeing how history comes and then goes in terms of in a cycular pattern. And it's based on how conscious we choose to remain. And we have lost a lot of our consciousness. Once you think everything's okay and you stop fighting for truth and justice and equal access, then things are going to slide backwards. And when you see people fighting against equal access, I mean, our first major legal example in our lifetime, I think, would be the repeal of affirmative action. Because the first thing that happened when they repealed affirmative action in education was employers started calling the courts and saying, "Does this mean we don't have to hire them anymore?"
Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay, Kevin?
Yeah, so I would say real briefly is that let's try and be way more proactive as opposed to reactive. I think there's a tendency in this country to wait until there's a huge disaster or problem or a lawsuit or what have you to really try and address a problem. So it's kind of like a cancer. You know, you want to get to it early. So I think that with as far as police community relations, in Bellevue, Washington, we had a series of community forums where officers sat down, had a cup of coffee with community members, and talked about things in, like use of force and profiling before an incident happened. And as a result, I think a lot of the problems that could result from stereotyping and profiling and that kind of thing never occurred in the community. So I would just encourage people to sit down at Starbucks, start talking, and really start listening to each other. Because as I said, every voice is important if we're going to get better and pick up that lost ground.
Thank you both very much. Go ahead.
You're welcome. Thank you.
A hallelujah moment to Kevin. That was a hallelujah moment for me. And also to say, I cannot emphasize enough how easy it is to shift people's thinking with knowledge and information. When we have been miseducated, and we all have, when we get the facts, when we get the truth, when we get the other perspective, it opens not only our mind, but it also opens our heart. Because I believe that most of us are compassionate, loving human beings. And some of the negative behavior that you see in all of us is usually rooted somewhere in some form of miseducation, misinformation, some form of fears based on that miseducation and misinformation. I believe the truth will set us free.
Okay, very good. Before we conclude, would one of you like to tell the audience how they can hear your Charlottesville program? If you don't have that information handy, if you get that to me, I'll post it on our website.
Yeah, I think we can get that to you. That would be best. But you can also find out more about the diversity community at yathatgame.com. So it's yathatgame.com. Just go to coaches and look for Starla and I in the diversity community.
Okay, very good. And when you get that information to me, for those who would like to hear the your Charlottesville program, I will post that on our website. Now, our hope Our hope with our Race in America series is to build bridges to connect our diverse worlds, and we hope this program tonight will have accomplished that in some small way with those who listen in. And we want to thank our guests, Mr. Kevin Henry and Ms. Starla Lewis. Thank you so much. We appreciate you coming to share with us your vast knowledge about race and diversity. And we want to encourage everyone to keep listening to the CWR Network for more in our continuing series on Race in America, Where Do We Go From Here? We also thank you, our listening audience, for being with us. And we remind you that you may listen to this program and all of our previous programs on demand anytime at blogtalkradio.com /DONED viewpoints. That's blogtalkradio.com /DONED viewpoints. Thanks for joining us and have a great night.